And welcome back in the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in on this Thursday. Nick, Braden, and Chase broadcasting live from St. Thomas Sports Park at Titans Camp. Day two of joint practices between the Titans and the Bucks. Jayon Brown, Titans linebacker, coming up at 7:45. But gentlemen, one thing I want to get to, I was thinking about this yesterday, and I said going to the break, could you envision any type of scenario, a plausible scenario, where the Titans actually win a Super Bowl before the Predators win the Stanley Cup? And before you go driving off of 24 thinking, what is he talking about? Let me just kind of set this up and explain from the standpoint of looking at these two franchises. Like, from the Titans standpoint, you know, we know the NFC is much more difficult to navigate than the AFC. Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger are closing in on the end of their careers. And I'm wondering if Marcus and LaFleur and Vrabel could simply be the benefactors of right place, right time. There's certainly other good teams in the AFC, Jacksonville, the Chargers, on down the list. And we know the Preds are a top three team in the NHL the last 2 years, but with the unpredictability of the Stanley Cup playoffs, I mean, you could go in as a one seed and get knocked off by an eight seed. We know Pekka is coming towards the end of his career. As much as we like UC Saros, we can't definitively say he's going to be a lockdown stud with absolute certainty.
Well, and by the way, not to Chase, I don't know if you picked up on this yesterday when we were talking to David Poyle, but he definitely alluded to having enough funds to handle the Pekka situation yesterday.
He did. Mm-hmm.
He did not really talk too much about it. He just sort of threw that in there, and he said, well, you know, we're going to have to worry about getting Pekka. Like, and that, to me, said Pekka's coming back. But to your point, what is he going to be?
Right.
I don't think it's like, because you sent it out when you sent that text message to the show, you were kind of like, is this kind of a thing that, like, if we all just totally disagree with this, then I don't want to talk about it. And I immediately was like, no. I totally think.
So you think it's possible?
I think it's completely possible.
Okay.
But that's why we play the games.
Because you,
right? I mean, that's,
you look at all the contracts that the Preds have. There's a lot of them, right? And there's a lot of big contracts that are either in place now or coming up.
Well, and let's just be like statistically driven here and just use ration and logic. The odds of the Preds winning the Stanley Cup over the next 5 years is, the odds are more likely that they won't win it than that they will. I mean, it's like winning a championship is incredibly difficult. There are 30 teams, 31 teams or whatever trying to do it every year, and it's just the odds of winning a championship are low. It's just the way it is when it comes to every professional sport. And the Titans are just as situated, maybe not as talented as the Predators. They're not the best team in the league, but how many wild cards or, you know, 10-6 or 11-5 teams go on and win Super Bowls? Happens all the time. Mm-hmm. So I just think the reason we play the games is that sports are unpredictable.
See, I just looked at it from, and then I tried to compare it to when I was in Philadelphia, and this was before I was even doing Philly media, as just a kid in college. The Eagles had a run from 2001 until about 2008 where they were in five NFC championships, they were in one Super Bowl, and they were kind of had this window of success like the Predators, and they couldn't get over the hump. McNabb and Reed couldn't win. And then here came the Phillies out of nowhere in 2008. They won the World Series, and I'm thinking, could the Titans kind of do that compared to the Preds?
Yeah, I mean, I think the if you're saying what are the odds, what am I predicting, I would go with the Preds first.
Oh, me too.
Like, it's a no-brainer. That's not what we're saying. We're saying, is it even possible? Would it happen that the Titans could get over this hump and get to the top of the mountain before the Predators do? And it's 100% possible.
But let's go beyond.
It's absolutely possible.
Let's go beyond just the, well, that's why they play the game. Like, can we definitively make a case? Can you structure an argument to say the Titans could actually pull this off because of bing, bang, boom?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in large part because they're both in their window, first of all. So that's what you have to be. You have to be a decent enough team. You have to have a quarterback, and they've got that guy, and I believe in Marcus Mariota. I don't think there's any question about that in my mind. I don't think he's Brady or Breeze or Rodgers, but I think he's a good player. So I think that the Titans are in the window. They're very talented and young on defense. A lot of this hinges on Mike Vrabel, Matt LaFleur, Dean Pease. Is that trio doing its job, and are they good enough high-quality coaches to handle the situations and manage game clock situations and all that stuff? But if you're telling me that the Titans all of a sudden, because the NFL changes so fast, like, that's the whole point of the league. The whole point of the league is that you can go from, you know, 6-10 to 10-10. I mean, look at the Jags last year. The Jags came out and they were garbage going into the season last year, and all of a sudden they're the best defense in the NFL, and they're in the AFC Championship game. So it's the Preds did the same thing themselves. They went from an 8 seed to the Stanley Cup Championship. So I just think there's, other than maybe, I guess maybe the NBA, I mean, there's not much that surprises me. Like, if you're saying, is it likely, I'm picking the Preds. If you're saying, is it possible, absolutely, the Titans could be the franchise that everything falls into place. Football's a game of luck a little bit more than hockey. Hockey certainly is, but the seven-game series generally eliminates luck, and the better team tends to win. So in football, you deflect one pass off a DB, and you happen to catch it, and you score your own touchdown, and all of a sudden you beat the Chiefs. And that can happen in the NFL. And so I think the reasonable argument is the AFC is down, like you said. The team's good. They've got critical pieces and critical situations. Like, they've got the offensive line situated. They've got the front seven with a lot of talent. Their secondary's in good shape. The quarterback's there. Like, you can make the case as to see why the Titans could go 10 or 11 wins this year. And if you're 10 or 11 wins, you have just as good a shot to get to a Super Bowl as anybody else.
But some people might – we want to hear from you, 615-737-1025. Some people would say I'm crazy for even bringing that up, because you can make the case that the Titans might only be the third-best team in their own division behind Jacksonville and Houston, whereas you look at the Predators, and I don't think you can make a case that they are not a top-three team in the NHL, much less their own central division.
Well, and all you got to do is look at the Predators 2 years. The year they went the farthest and played for the championship, they were like fifth place in their division.
Mm-hmm.
And the year that they won every single regular season possible award and trophy, they didn't even make it out of the second round. So even just looking at the Preds, you can say, well, finishing first in your division doesn't mean much. It gets you home ice, and that's important, but that didn't matter last year to the Preds. So I think what the only thing you need for this to be a discussion is both teams are good. And I think clearly both teams are good. One of them might be better than the other. I think the Preds are better at hockey than the Titans are at football. But
yeah,
to suggest that the Titans couldn't, all of a sudden one thing happens, Jack Conklin's fully healthy, Harold Landry and Rashawn Evans are good, Corey Davis is a solid player, Marcus and the offense click together, and they win 11 games, and they go to the AFC Championship game and maybe pull an upset? Sure. I think having to go through the Patriots is just as challenging as the Predators having to go through whoever the big dog in the East is.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that's just as big a challenge. And frankly, for the Titans, you're going to have to go through the NFC champ, which is going to be a monstrosity of a team. So
let me ask you this.
They're both extremely unlikely. Let's just leave it at that. I think the Preds are more likely, but either of them could happen in the next 3 years, and I wouldn't be surprised at it. It would be awesome.
What is the bigger challenge? The Predators getting past Winnipeg or the Titans getting past Brady?
Patriots. Not even close.
Okay. Because we saw the matchup issues that the Preds had with Winnipeg with size.
But it still went seven games.
Yeah.
They still won on the road a couple of times. The statistics were basically dead even going into the seventh game. I think Winnipeg was the better team in that series, and you heard David Poile say it yesterday when I asked him, you know, how much do you use a playoff series or one postseason to evaluate your team? And he's like, well, no, you can't. You've got to look at the entire body of work. And I think that's they just need a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that, play a little bit better hockey, be a little bit more consistent. Pekka plays a little bit better, get some luck, which is basically what David Poile said yesterday, and they can beat Winnipeg. So I think beating Tom Brady is a far greater task, especially if you have to do it in Foxborough.
Chase McCabe, can you come up with a plausible scenario where the Titans get to the promised land quicker than the Preds?
I mean, if you look at it on paper, no, because I think the Titans are probably a few years off. Now, do I think that this team this year could be a playoff team? I do. But do I think that they're a Super Bowl winning team? No. And I do think the Preds can do that. It's funny you guys mentioned Winnipeg. I actually was on a radio station in Winnipeg yesterday talking about the Ryan Ellis signing. They're very, very, very curious about this team and what David Poile has done over the summer. And really hasn't had to do a lot because this team was so good as is, and his priority was getting Ryan Ellis signed. So they're very much aware of what's going on here in Nashville, and I think that the Predators are going to be more equipped to get through Winnipeg this time around because they've gotten punched in the mouth and kind of know what to expect a little bit better going into it. So I feel like the Preds are built for a championship right now, and I think the Titans are on their way to that. They're just not there yet.
All right.
By the way, I don't disagree with anything you just said, but That's not how sports always plays out, right? I mean, that's why we watch games, is because crazy things happen, right?
Right, but there are times, you know, I think sometimes, and I'm guilty of it, we've been guilty of it on the show, we get caught up in the eighth seed going in and shocking everybody and going to the Stanley Cup final. Sometimes, though, the best team does win. And they are that dominant. I mean, we've seen it with how many times
hasn't
have
happened
we seen
in a while
it with the
in the NHL though.
Well, I mean, I,
so
I think,
are you saying the whole
actually,
eight
I disagree
seed
with that,
one thing
Braden,
is overplayed?
Well, the President's Trophy hasn't won anything in years,
right? But okay, that's a fair point. That's a very fair point. It was Chicago a few years ago that I think was the last team to do that. So, but I think that Pittsburgh probably, you know, one of the first year they won the Cup were probably the better team, even though they didn't win the President's Trophy. They were the best team going into the playoffs. So,
right.
You know, and then I think you look at the Patriots time and time again. How many times have they won it and been the best team?
Yeah, I feel a little bit like Floyd Reese, where, like, you guys are asking me, you're like, well, who's better situated to win a championship? And I'm like, well, the Predators, of course. And then you're like, well, but would you be surprised if the Titans went? No, of course not.
Can you give us a Floyd laugh?
No. Listen to that impersonation. That was a good impersonation, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very good.
That was me.
On demand.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, Ronald Acuna and Bush League tactics. Stay there. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Acuna's hit 12 homers, 24 RBIs, and 25 runs scored leading off. And he got smoked on the very first pitch. Chad Fairchild, right out in front of the plate. Acuna tosses the helmet down, and now in a crouch on the third base line. The very first pitch of the game nails Ronald Acuna Jr., and now the Braves are coming out of their dugout looking at Urania. Both benches are going to empty. Brad Snitker's leading the charge.
I don't blame Snit for being mad right here. And I'll tell you what, if the umpire, Chad Fairchild, he should be tossed right here, Joe.
Absolutely, he should.
And that was Skip Carey and Joe Simpson last night on the Braves television network, Fox Sports Atlanta, as the Braves and Marlins were going at it. And what you would think is a meaningless game in August. The Braves up, what, two games on the Phillies. Obviously, they're playing for something, but the Marlins are just a disaster.
If you're only up two games, every game counts.
Yes, yes, for the Braves. But for the Marlins, you come out and you plunk Ronald Acuna on the first pitch. Young stud who is tearing it up. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this because I didn't see it live, but I saw Chase McCabe going on.
Ooh, Chase McCabe.
I kind of like that.
New guy.
Chase McCabe. You might want to tweak that, Chase. I saw you going off on Twitter last night, and one of your tweets got a ton of responses.
You did, too.
And so I actually wanted to find the video. So I saw Barrett Salee, of all people, put out the video. I saw it, and then I put this tweet out. I want to get people's thoughts because I've never been a baseball purist, nor have I ever subscribed to it's how they police themselves. I said throwing at somebody isn't Bush League. It's gutless. You're not tough. It doesn't make you a tough guy. And I think in a day and age of player safety in sports, that it should not be part of the game anymore.
All right, I'll be the bad guy here because Chase McCabe hinted that the pitcher should be suspended 50 games for
okay,
what he
well,
did.
Before you,
that is a passionate Braves fan being a homer.
Okay, before you come after me, let me go ahead and just read my tweet and then defend myself, and then you do what you need to do. So I said Urania should get a 50-game ban for that Bush League blank. That's BS. A bad look for the game. Unnecessary. And obviously, yes, I am a Braves fan. That was an emotionally driven tweet. I was exaggerating. I knew he was not going to get 50 games.
But Aroldis Chapman almost shot his family, and he got 35 games.
Right. Holy cow, so. Though. Twitter just, like, came after me about that and called me,
good.
Like, called
yeah,
me. Yeah, okay, but there's a line. There's a line.
Like, no,
yeah,
no, you're right.
After
you're
me,
right.
But there's a
but
line.
You but
calling
you know,
me
but,
names that we should take out of our vocabulary in this
yeah,
in this day.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, people. You're better
Twitter
than
is
that.
Mean
well, but
streets.
Chase, this is a perfect opportunity, first of all, for everyone to learn the lesson of you cannot take Twitter too seriously. I realize that online bullying is a very serious topic and that we need to make sure that we're teaching young people to use the internet safely and smartly and all that stuff. But you guys know, like, Twitter is Twitter. You have to sort of understand that you can't put any self-worth or value onto Twitter, like whether or not a tweet gets a, like, because you know it's all designed to, like, release dopamine in your brain,
right.
So that you're like, oh, I need to check.
Dopamine.
Well, that's what happens. I mean, that's what Instagram does. Instagram holds back likes so that you check it more often, because when you see something that you've done gets likes, it releases an endorphin in your brain that says, ooh, that makes me feel good. So, like, it's the opposite is true, too. Like, with Chase's account, with Chase's tweet, people attacking him, and mean you just have to take it for what it is. So that's one lesson here.
And I do, but like here's my whole thing, because I am a baseball purist. I mean, I love the game of baseball. I understand sometimes you got to plunk a guy. That is a code.
So why wasn't last night one of those times?
Because if you want to go after, I mean, if you don't like a guy hitting home runs off you, go strike him out.
Well, how is that any different than any other? But how is that different than any other unwritten rule?
But it's
when a guy
such...
hits a home run and hot dogs it, and then you plunk him the next at bat, everyone says that's fine. That's you not doing your job as a pitcher. You give up a home run,
right? But on the first pitch of the game, I mean, I get it if it's later on, whatever.
It's to prove a point.
But the first pitch of the game, you're going to throw a 97 mile per hour fastball. I mean, you could if it hits him in the right spot, you're ending his season. So that I have a problem with.
But should it really matter where you hit him?
Like, yes, obviously 100%.
Obviously the head is going to be a disaster. But
He didn't throw at his head.
No, I know. But why is it acceptable? Just and beyond the fact that that's the way they've done it for 130 years.
Well, no. Here's the deal. He was on the plate. Let's just be honest with that. But it was on purpose. So I'm not going to defend the action. I think to call him names and call him gutless and cowardly and all this other stuff. Like, I just don't, listen, I watched Derrick Henry hit Riley Bulla harder than that fastball hit Ronald Acuna last night.
But let me ask you.
I think we're overreacting to Ronald. Like, if it hurts him, and I realize hindsight could be 2020 in this,
he had to leave
the
game.
Throw at someone's head, do I?
He had to leave the game.
No, I know. Listen, I'm not defending the action as, like, the right thing to do. I just think people are up in arms because he had a streak going, and if it was any other, listen, you throw at a guy when he's super hot and killing teams.
So you think more circumstance than the actual act?
Yeah, I guess. Listen, I'm not like saying that I'm in favor of it. I'm not saying it's not Bush League, but to suggest that a guy should be suspended for doing something that happens all of the time in baseball in a million different situations, I just think it's a little much. I think that's going overboard. And Chase walked it back this morning. He said, I was overreacting. I was heated in the moment. And that's fine. Like, I don't have a problem with people being upset with it. Like, hey, don't do that because my guy had a streak going or whatever. But if a guy's super hot, you get plunked. That's what happens sometimes. Like, that's part of the game.
Yeah, but
is if you're going at the head, then I think you should be kicked out of the game and suspended. I if you're trying to hurt somebody, that's clearly not what they were trying to do. They were not trying to hurt this player.
Okay, so throwing 97 miles per hour is not trying to hurt somebody.
Dude, they throw
Sports
are dangerous,
guys. I got a tweet from Zach last
night. No, breaking balls are less easy to control. You can hit somebody in the head more with a breaking ball.
I got a tweet last night from Zach saying, it's like a body check in hockey. And I'm trying to think, wait a minute. So a baseball 95 miles an hour plus at somebody's body, whether it's the head, the back, the neck, the butt cheek, whatever it might be, like how can you compare using your body in a collision sport to a baseball where when you have the intent of throwing a baseball at somebody's body, you're basically turning the ball into a weapon. How is that allowed?
Well, then what is PK? I mean, Chris Mason says this all the time. The things you get away with on a hockey rink are criminal on a sidewalk.
Yes.
They're criminal. Like, criminal behavior. So don't tell me that the hockey stick isn't used as a weapon. Don't tell me that the helmet's not used as a weapon. All this stuff happens in every other sport, and you get a 15-yard penalty for it in football, or you get a 2-minute minor for it in hockey, and we move on. Like, it happens. Braves fans are upset because their guy had a streak going, and that's it.
My whole thing has been like,
according to the rules, it's not just about Acuna
or last night. I don't like it across the. I've never liked it. Like, there was a time, I think, when the Yankees were managed by Joe Torre, where they did not throw as retaliation. Like, I always respected that.
I do, too.
Like, I watch a guy throw a baseball at somebody and plunk him, and then the guy charges the mound, and then the guy who threw the pitch either backpedals or throws his glove at the guy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not saying that there aren't, like, lots of stupid occasions that this happened, and I'm not even disagreeing that this was unwarranted. It's not. I mean, I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying people are overreacting to it. That's all. I just think it's too much Twitter outrage. It's too and to like if Chase, if you were to stick by your first tweet, I would call you insane. Because people are getting suspended for fewer games than 50 for like beating their wives. Like that that's like that so that I would but you've walked it back, so I'm not even gonna try like I don't
look
you know, it's not that big a deal. But to suggest that some guy should be you wanna kick him out of the game? I don't have a problem with that. Hey, it's like again, if you spear somebody in the NFL late hit, it's a 15-yard penalty, and you could get ejected from the game. Okay, fine. Okay, There it is.
Well, I can tell you this.
If we move on.
If you don't want to get it like completely legislated out of the game, how about you put in a new rule where if there is an intent, and obviously it's hard
to determine. How do you legislate intent?
It's hard to determine intent, but if in that situation, Acuna automatically gets second base. He's automatically put in scoring position.
I would love that to be the case, just like they're trying, like, but you cannot legislate intent. Just like in hockey, the reason high sticking is worded the way it is, mm-hmm. is that it doesn't matter if you did it on purpose or not. If your stick makes contact with the face, or the neck or the head or above a certain, whatever the wording of the rule is, you are responsible for your stick at all times when you're on the ice. And even if it was an accident and it wasn't even your doing, somebody hits you and the stick flails and it hits somebody in the face, it's your fault. So there are things that are in sports that are against the rules. You break a rule, you pay a penalty. If they would have kicked the guy out, did they kick him out of the game?
Yes.
I don't know.
He got kicked out of the game, and even his manager, Don Mattingly, said afterwards, look, I told him that's not how we do things. We're going to do things. Because and everybody knew, because Don Mattingly is a baseball guy. I mean, he respects the game enough that he's not going to go tell him, hey, he's hot, so hit him. Now, he said, look, I want you to go get him. I mean, throw in on him, brush him off the plate, whatever you got to do, but don't
hit
him.
He likes that inside corner of the plate now.
Right. So I respect Don Mattingly for saying that, for saying, look, we want to beat the guy, but we don't want to hurt him. And I told Jose, we're not going to do that. That's not how we do things here. So
I agree with that general stance. I don't agree. I'm with you guys that it's a Bush League move. I'm not with the outrage. Like, a guy getting plunked in the batter's box is a pretty normal thing in baseball. It's not over. Like, I'm all for player safety. If you're throwing at some guy's head, then I think you should be in trouble for it. But he did it the right. Keith Hernandez went out and said, absolutely, you should hit the guy.
Yeah, well, now, Keith Hernandez made himself sound like an idiot because he didn't even know who they were playing. That ticked me off even
Keith
more.
Does like, that, I mean, Keith if does that frequently.
If you're going to have an opinion on something, at least know who the teams are that you're talking about.
I mean, listen, if you want to hit a guy because he's really, really hot and he's hitting home runs, that's been going on for 75 years. As long as you do it the right way, which is you're not throwing at his head, you're not trying to injure the guy, it is what it is. I don't approve of it. I don't love it. I also I'm not outraged by it. And I think the outrage, people that are – like, I saw Barrett Sleeve's video and people are like, get down there and get in a fight. And I'm like – come on, guys. Like, it's a baseball. He was standing in the batter's box. He hit him with a baseball. Let's move on. It's not like it's not that. I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority on this.
No, we're going to come back to this in a little bit. So if you got some thoughts on
that. We agree to disagree, Braden.
Exactly.
All right, coming up next, we wrap up our AFC North two-a-days with the Baltimore Ravens. Stay there. It's Morning Drive on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe. We are broadcasting live from St. Thomas Sports Park at Titans Camp, day two of the joint practices between the Titans and the Bucks. We'll get back to some of the Ronald Acuna discussion coming up in just a little bit, but right now we kick off our Morning Drive two-a-days as we are almost done with the AFC North. Two divisions to go left in the league. We got the West and the South in the AFC, but joining us right now for the Baltimore Ravens perspective is Gary Stein, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. Gary, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Good to have you in. I want to start with the quarterback situation in Baltimore. Obviously, Lamar Jackson was drafted to, I think, one day take over for Joe Flacco, although I'm not sure how soon that will happen. How has that, quote, quarterback battle played out so far in the month of August?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really think it's a battle at all. I think that Flacco is entrenched as the starter, as he should be. He's coming off of three subpar years, there's no doubt about it, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. But, they've been injury-plagued and other factors. I don't think they put a good supporting cast around him, to be honest. So I really don't see it as a battle. He's clear-cut the number one. Lamar Jackson has shown flashes. There's no doubt that he has the athletic ability and probably worthy of a number one round pick, which he was. But Flacco's the man, and he's healthy. This is the first time in 3 years that he's been able to participate fully in training camp. He didn't have his first practice last year until September 1st, three or four days before the opener, because of the bad back. And he had the knee a couple of years ago, and he's had some other issues. So I think what we're seeing right now is a healthy Flacco, a motivated Flacco, because when the team drafts your position in the number one in the first round, that kind of gets your attention. He may not admit it. He won't say it publicly, but it's just human nature. So I think this is Flacco's team for now. Now, the question you asked of how long, now that could change next year because Flacco has a large contract, and you know the way these contracts work in the NFL, they're not fully guaranteed, obviously. Next year is the year where it actually makes financial sense for the team to cut Flacco and save the money on the cap as opposed to pay him $29 million. So we'll see if they renegotiate. We'll see if he has a good year, and next year is up for grabs. But right now, it's definitely Flacco's team.
What is sort of the, you know, we talked a little Bengals football this week, and sort of the Marvin Lewis conversation feels like it's been the same for like 6 years. What is sort of the relationship between John Harbaugh and the fans? And this is a guy who's won a Super Bowl, who's been a pretty good coach, has the name and everything, but seemingly is in the playoff hunt, whether he's dealing with injuries or not. Are the fans starting to sour on John Harbaugh? Why is it that there's conversation about Harbaugh's job security?
You know, that's a really good question. Harbaugh, it's a little bit of a complicated relationship. Yes, he's had a lot of success. All the playoff appearances, the Super Bowl, the AFC Championship games with the Patriots and the Steelers and all that. But the fact of the matter is that many fans, I would say a vocal minority, put it that way. You always have your silent majority. You never hear from them, but you do have your vocal minority on the radio and on social media. So in that vocal minority, a lot of Harbaugh's success was attributed to the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed era. And it's true. He made the playoffs every year with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, and he's only made the playoffs once since they've gone. And, you know, part of that era was the alpha male mentality. That was Ray Lewis's team. From 1996 to 2008, that was, or 2012, that was Ray Lewis's team. There was no doubt about it. He had the most influence of any one single player south of Tom Brady, perhaps, on any team in the National Football League. And so a lot of that success was credited to Ray and Ed and that environment. Harbaugh jettisoned those guys, partly, Ray left on his own, but a lot of the guys, Bernard Pollard was another guy, jettisoned those guys because he didn't like that alpha male personality. He wanted the team to be more balanced, and he hasn't had that success since. So I think the vocal minority continue to harp on Harbaugh's faults and continue to look the other way at his success because they attribute the success to other parts of the team.
Talking to Gary Stein, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, getting the Ravens perspective, part of our Morning Drive two-a-days here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So you look at the offseason acquisitions, John Brown, Michael Crabtree, Willie Snead, they draft Hayden Hurst. Alex Collins is kind of a stud running back on the verge of maybe breaking out. Is this the best collection of talent Joe Flacco has had around him since the Super Bowl run?
Yes, no doubt about it. And you hit it on the head. Every single person that you just mentioned, every single player, has brought something different and necessary to the team. Crabtree is the number one receiver, at least for right now, because of his leadership and his red zone ability. John Brown, and he's healthy right now, we'll see how long that lasts because we all know the history, has the ability to blow the top off the defense, and he's done it regularly in camp so far. Willie Snead is a sneaky, stealthy little, not little, he's big, but a stealthy slot receiver, not particularly fast, not particularly overwhelming. Of course, didn't have a big year last year because of the personal problems and all that stuff, but he gets open. And the camaraderie and the connection between he and Flacco has been terrific during camp. Hayden Hurst is a very mature 25-year-old tight end out of South Carolina. You forgot to mention Mark Andrews, tight end out of Oklahoma. He's been hurt, so we haven't seen much of him, but he's got ability. And Alex Collins, I think that, we get a full season of a healthy Alex Collins, and I think he doesn't get his credit as a pass-catching threat out of the backfield. I really look at him like a Mark Ingram type who can kind of do it all. And then there's some guys behind him. So and they drafted a couple of long, tall, lanky receivers, fourth and fifth round. So, yes, I think this is the best cast that Flacco has around him. I think this is the healthiest that Flacco has been in the last 4 years. And I'm actually pretty optimistic about this offense.
What were your thoughts on Dean Pease's tenure there and what he brought to that defense? And obviously we're here in Nashville where he is now. We've had a chance to talk with him. Just sort of what is the view of his tenure?
Mixed. There's no doubt that he, with his career, we're here with the Ravens, he won a Super Bowl, and of course before that with the Patriots and Bill Belichick. There's no doubt that he's got a lot of accolades in his career, well-deserved. But the one statistic that's going to stand out for Ravens fans when they assess the Dean Pease era as far as defensive coordinator is concerned, the Ravens are 40-40 in the last 5 years, not all attributed to Pease. However, of those 40 losses, 13 of the losses have been late leads given up by the defense. So the thought around here among fans and media is that he got conservative late in games to prevent defense prevents you from winning, basically the mentality. And that cost the Ravens. And, last year, perfect example, Tyler Boyd, 49-yard touchdown or 44-yard touchdown, whatever it was, with 45 seconds to play on 4th-and-12 against Cincinnati. One play leaves them short of the playoffs. I mean, how does Tyler Boyd do that? You know, Ravens fans can stomach Antonio Brown crossing the goal line or Santonio Holmes back in the day from Ben Roethlisberger, but Andy Dalton or Tyler Boyd, are you kidding me, on a prevent defense? I mean, there's just no way. So I think that's the one thing about Dean Pease that'll stick in the craw of Ravens fans is the fact that his defense let fourth quarter leads regularly slip through their grasp.
Gary Stein, 105.7 The Fan, covers the Baltimore Ravens. We appreciate the time and the insight. Thank you very much, Gary.
You got it, guys. Best of luck this season.
Thank you very much. Coming up next, we continue the NFL conversation, and it's pulling up right now to our broadcast area. Titans linebacker Jayon Brown. He'll join us coming up next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason's got the morning off. He's sick. We're broadcasting live from St. Thomas Sports Park at Titans Camp. Day two of joint practices between the Titans and the Bucks. And joining us right now, second-year linebacker for the Tennessee Titans, Jayon Brown. Jayon, good morning, man. Thanks for stopping by.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So let's start, and we'll get to the game from last week because you certainly had a good game. But just in general, year one, your first go-around through camp with a guy like Mike Mularkey. Fast forward to this year, year two, new coach Mike Vrabel. Any differences, any similarities to just the way camps are conducted from two different guys?
Camp's about the same. Mostly it's rough and, a lot of competitiveness between everybody. Everybody's excited for season to start back up, and everybody's out here competing, just trying to get better.
Now, I want to ask you about Long Beach Poly at some point, because I know you want to brag about the most productive high school in America when it comes to NFL players. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh, yeah.
Your game is so well-suited to sort of where the NFL is headed, right? The NFL has changed over the last 15 years and less in the box, more this quick, fast passing game, and you got to be able to play a lot of different positions. How do you view sort of the modern NFL passing offense, and what makes you so good and well-situated to handle that new thing that's happening on offense?
Well, these offenses have a lot of skillful players in their backfields, and they want to get these guys in space, so you got to have defenders that can guard these talented backs in space and guard them, run with them, and also be able to deal with these linemen. So having a guy like me in your defense, it helps tremendously with solving that problem. And you just got to keep going out there, with the Bucks practice, just keep going and improving each and every day with one-on-ones and teams when they split the back wide at the number one receiver and just guard.
Now, you really stood out this past week in the first preseason game, and they talked about it on the broadcast, Charles Davis talking about just how well you cover in space. Would you – now, I know linebackers have a lot of killer instinct in them, a lot of dog in them. Would you rather cover in space and make a pick on a tight end, or would you rather come downhill and just crush a running back?
Is the ball popping out on that?
The ball is popping out.
Well, how about the pulling guard? I know they don't run a lot of student body left anymore. I know you're from SoCal, but – If you see a pulling guard and you know you got to be the force, would you rather be that, or would you rather see, I don't know, Le'Veon Bell in space and be like, I got to cover that guy?
I think it's more of a demanding win when you force somebody to fumble, but getting an interception is dope too. But when you hit somebody so hard that the ball pops out, that's a huge win.
Jayon Brown joining us here, of course, for the Tennessee Titans. And you look at this group of linebackers and this front seven that you have. You know, Jarrell Casey's probably a little underrated when it comes to nationally. When the people look about, they talk about the best defensive lineman, he probably doesn't get mentioned. Wesley Woodyard has had a spectacular couple of years here in Tennessee and in Nashville. But you also got a couple of young guys with some veterans. Sort of walk us through what you've seen from the young players in that front seven and what they're bringing to the table right now.
Oh, young dudes like Harold Landry's been on his, he's been on his stuff since he's got here, pass rushing wise, getting to the quarterback, doing tremendous pressure. Dane in the secondary, he's coming along. He's had a good camp, and we expect things out of him as well. And Luke is doing pretty good itself. So I think all of our rookies overall has been doing pretty good, and just gotta stay focused and keep getting better.
A lot of people talk about this defense as the strength of the defense being the secondary, but you look at the linebacking core yourself, Wesley, Rashawn, Arakpo, Morgan, Evans. I mean, you guys have Will Compton. You guys have seven or eight guys at that linebacker position. How strong is that unit? Because it certainly looks like you have a lot of depth.
Yeah, we do, and we all just learn from each other's mistakes and just keep trying to, you know, stride and push each other to be better, and we want to be the best group in the league, so we're going to keep working hard at that, and our coaches and our coaching staff is going to help us get to that goal to where we can be the best, and whoever's in there is going to get the job done.
Well, let's get to know Jayon Brown a little bit here. So you go to UCLA. First of all, how much, and I know this for a fact happens with Jack Conklin and Taylor Lewan. I know for a fact about that. And all the Bama guys, I'm sure, talk about Bama a lot.
Yeah.
So how much conference pride do you have in the locker room when you come in on Sundays and, you know, the Pac-12's playing a big game or the SEC's playing a big game? How much do you guys talk about that? And then tell us your story about how you ended up going and picking and choosing UCLA out of Long Beach Poly.
Well, it's a lot of Pac-12 pride in our locker room. I hear from Adoree every time we play. So we better win this year. I got a lot of faith in Chip and our guys at back at UCLA, and it's just a huge rivalry. Anytime you know, SC and UCLA play, just got to hold it down. We got a lot of we got Jarrell and Adoree in there.
I was gonna say hit Deontay Burnett maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, you always hear about it, though, like we're in the locker room talking about colleges, and then everybody got to put their 2 cents in it. Oh, I went 2-2 against y'all. I never lost. I got to hear all that stuff. But, you know, we gonna hold it down. It's a new year. I got high hopes. We all do for UCLA, and it's going to be a good year. But coming out of Long Beach Poly, I only had three offers. I had Colorado, Colorado State, and UCLA, and UCLA was the obvious choice for me. And it was close to home as well, and I love the coaching staff that we had there with Jim Mora, and just developed me, and then when I got my time to shine, I took advantage of it.
I was just going to ask you about Chip Kelly. I covered him in Philadelphia. Do you think he's going to get UCLA to that next level? And then secondly, when we talk about rivalries, we always talk Alabama, Auburn, Ohio State, Michigan, but take us to the West Coast, because sometimes people don't give the West Coast its due love because of the time difference. UCLA, USC. There's a rivalry there. A lot of people might not recognize that.
It's a huge rivalry, and I know we play a little later, so the East Coast can't watch us all the time. But
sleep bias.
Yeah, it goes down though. I think my record against SC is 2-2. Should have been like 3-1, but you know, it happens. But it's a huge rivalry because all of us, mostly from SC and UCLA, we grew up playing against each other in Pop Warner in high school. Yep. So when you play now, you're playing against your friends, and it's a lot of bragging rights that you want to have the winning side of that coming up from that game. So you just got to give it all you got.
And for people that don't know, in this area, Nashville, Long Beach Poly is. There's not many high schools that have ever produced the amount of talent that have come out of that high school as far as NFL players and football talent. Marcus, West Coast guy, obviously from the islands, plays in the Pac-12, has a great career. What is it about him that – because the word I get from all the players is respect. Like, there's just a natural respect for him, and he doesn't really, like, go out and search for it, right? It just sort of happens. What is it about him and his leadership and personality that sort of people – gravitate towards? Does that make sense?
Yeah. He leads by example, and you know, I know we see him working, and we all look up to him as a leader. And he's gonna. I'm not on the offensive side, obviously, but he's a good leader.
So if GQ magazine were to come up to you and ask you about quarterbacks around the league, would you have any negative things to say about quarterbacks?
Nah.
Or you don't have that Jalen Ramsey gear?
I gotta get my own name up to before I can even do any of that. So
I think Mike Vrabel might
love the Marcus though.
He
was very complimentary of Marcus.
He was. I think he said a good game manager.
So is that a slight or is that credit?
I think that's credit. Okay. I think that's credit.
Yeah. This is what you say. Every quarterback in the NFL has a lot of ability and a lot of talent, and they all work their butt off to be the best they can possibly be. I got to do the same thing. That's all you got to say. Mike Vrabel's cool with it, right?
Yeah.
Jayon Brown joining us here from the Tennessee Titans. And what I find interesting about this time at camp, camp's about to get over and you start to get into game prep week. Try to tell the fans the biggest difference between camp and what like a game week feels like, the difference between the routines for you guys as players.
Camp, you're just grinding through like any – it's a big grind. You're just because it's consistent. It's every day back-to-back practices. You got pads on, and I would say it's more of a load on your body with camp, and then compared to the season, where the not the tempo slows down, but like the how could I say it the
more recovery.
Yeah, you get more recovery during the season, and you gotta. Get ready for the games. You get to scout more. Get ready for the offense, their tendencies with the O-line, with the backs, with the quarterback's progressions, and just get more prepared for the offense. As when you're going to these games, you're still – these preseason games, you're just trying to get better at with yourself and as a defense to just get ready for a season. So, you know, you're still learning our stuff and trying to perfect our craft before a season.
Do you have a welcome to the NFL moment, like specifically like a specific play or moment or game or anything, preseason, regular season, anything that you're like, oh, okay, this is different?
Last year, my first one-on-ones against David Flewellen, he made me turn around in circles during the one-on-ones guarding him. So I was like, ah, man.
Jayon Brown, Titans linebacker. Hey, continued success. We appreciate you stopping by. Have a good practice and a good scrimmage this weekend. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
There he is, Titans linebacker Jayon Brown. Morning Drive will continue live from Titans camp right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.